from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrav Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll learn about this year's Indianapolis Garden Club Garden Walk.
I'll get a preview of the opera Crescendo with Emily Fons.
And I'll find out about a production of Merry Wives of Windsor set in the 1950s. And we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indianapolis Garden Club is getting ready for its annual garden walk on Wednesday, June 8th. And Sharon Gamble invited Mary Grine of the organizing committee to tell us about the featured gardens, as well as how the club invests the funds they raise.
So I'm going to ask you to read, because I know mission statements aren't easy to memorize. So just remind us of what the mission of the Indianapolis Garden Club is.
Well, generally, since 1930, our mission has been civic improvement, primarily green spaces in the community. So over the past, since the Garden Walk has been established, which has been 21 years,
wow,
we've donated almost $400,000 to Holiday Park, to the Indianapolis Museum of Art, to the Indianapolis Zoo, to the Indianapolis Public Library, Connor Prairie, you know, all throughout the Indianapolis community, Garfield Park. We are trying to enhance the quality of life in the city of Indianapolis and the surrounding communities by helping organizations and their promote their green spaces.
And, you know, that's so important, because I'll put my other hat on as a fundraiser for not-for-profits. Most funders want to fund your programs. They want to, you know, fund your dance company or your orchestra or your historic preservation organization. They get a little nervous when you say, would you fund our landscaping or our front flower garden? And it's one of those things that people only notice when it's not there. If people walk up to the President Benjamin Harrison home and there's not a beautiful garden surrounding that great historic place, they notice. But you are filling an important niche, because there aren't a lot of funders who will help out with the beauty, with the greenscaping.
Yes, and this year in particular, we were able to make multiple grants to key organizations in the city. For instance, we gave $20,000 to Keep Indianapolis Beautiful to create a gateway garden in the Martindale-Brightwood neighborhood. Mm. And that garden will be employing youth in the summer to help plant and to harvest vegetables for the community there.
Oh, wonderful.
We were able to help the Nature Conservancy with $17,500 to establish or to enhance the garden that's in front of their headquarters on Ohio Street. They are trying to plant more native plants that attract pollinators, which we know is a key issue, the loss of our pollinators across the country. We were able to donate to the Connor Prairie, to the William Connor State. They've just renovated it, and they want to put in more native woodland and prairie plants at the Connor Prairie Estate. So there have been multiple contributions we've been able to make this year to, again, enhance the green spaces and provide more pollinator or more plants that attract pollinators in the Indianapolis area.
And I want you to say a little bit more about that, because a lot of people hear the buzzword of native plants and they don't kind of understand, well, how's that defined and why is it important to plant natives?
Well, it's important because, for instance, species of dogwood, Virginia bluebells, these are the kinds of plants that attract bees, bats, other pollinators. And there have been a lot of articles, and I'm sure you've covered it, on the decline in pollinators in the United States. So it is really key that these plants are reinstituted, that there are more of them, throughout, because the natural areas are declining within Indianapolis, and we just can't afford to lose the plant material.
Right. And it's one of the downsides of living in a global world. You know, you can get online and order plants that are native to someplace literally on the other side of the globe, and they might grow here, but they're not fulfilling that important function that you just described of keeping our native habitat going.
Yes, that's correct.
And so the money to make these grants comes largely from the Garden Walk.
That's correct. And this year it is on June 8th. It's always on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It's from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And there'll be five gardens featured. They are primarily in the Meridian Kessler area and just north of that. If you have not received an invitation in the mail, there are tickets available at Charles Meyer at 56 and Illinois Street. And you can always go to our website, which is igcgardenwalk.com. And there are instructions there how to obtain tickets. We hope for it's rain or shine. And we've had many people there in ponchos in rainy weather. These are people that just love to look at properties and gardens, and it's always an enjoyable day. There's a luncheon option available at Woodstock Club for an additional $25. But again, and we have sponsors that help us with this event.
Sure.
And they are really important to us. And so anyway, all these funds, again, go back into the Indianapolis community.
Mm-hmm. And the gardens, and if you've heard our conversation about Indianapolis Garden Walk before, you know that we don't mention the addresses. You get the addresses after you buy your ticket.
That is correct.
For reasons I think most people can understand. We don't want random people just popping in looking at the garden.
That's correct.
But it sounds like a great variety this year. I'm especially attracted to the collector's garden, 900 varieties of hostas.
That is correct.
That's a big, it's either a big yard or a very crowded garden.
It's a large yard, and it's a very organized yard.
Uh-huh.
There are rooms within this property, and they are outdoor rooms, mm-hmm, containing different varieties of hosta, usually with a theme. Very, very interesting and very dedicated gardeners.
And they also have more than 50 varieties of Japanese maples.
Yes, yes.
That just sounds, it sounds like they've been there a little while.
They have been working on this for years, and it's really quite amazing.
Fantastic. Remind me of an etiquette point. Is it okay to take pictures during this tour, or is it appropriate to ask the owners of each garden?
Generally, the owners let people take pictures of different, you know, if there's a particular plant or whatever, yes.
Sure.
It's not been a problem.
Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. Good.
As long as they're not publishing it and just,
right.
Know, yeah.
Sure,
mm-hmm.
Sure. As long as it's for their own. Ooh, I need to get one of those hostas
exactly.
With the yellow edges. I really love that one. I've never seen that before. Not that I've had that experience.
And we do provide information sheets at each garden, which list, you know, the different varieties of plant material and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So.
Oh, that's a nice bonus. Mm-hmm. There's a property not far away from the collector's garden called Shady Neighbors. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that one.
Well, they are actually next door neighbors.
Oh. So,
and the interest of the one of the neighbor prompted the Shady Neighbor to become involved in gardening and to establish a garden that literally connects to the others.
Oh.
And it's equally as interesting, and it's a great story.
And has a fair amount of shade, I'm gathering.
Yes,
a lot of mature
yes,
trees.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. That's the play on names, yeah, Shady
okay.
Neighbors.
As a knitter, I'm intrigued by the Knitting in Nature garden.
That is fabulous. It's just an interesting property. It is bordered by seven different garages that, because it's a long property.
Uh-huh.
And so it has a very, I would describe it as just a kind of a quirky feel, but mm-hmm, the owner, in addition to gardening, is a phenomenal knitter, and she has created a she cottage in her yard for all of her, where it's where she knits and where she displays her knitting. It's just fabulous.
That, for somebody who hasn't heard that term before, what is a she cottage or a she shed?
There were a lot of articles about it last year. I think people tend to think of, you know, a shed as a man's place or a gardening shed or whatever. And these are, well, tend to be more, say, feminine pursuits like knitting. And they're just a place where a woman can go and, you know, pursue her talent.
Mm-hmm. We should probably warn folks who come on this tour that once they start seeing these, they're going to want one of their own.
Yeah, exactly right.
Can hear the conversation on that Wednesday night. Honey, guess what I saw today? Guess what? You're going to figure out how to build me. Meridian Revival is a garden themed around a 1924 Tudor Revival style house, right?
Correct. And this gentleman, this garden owner, has done it all himself. And he, you know, he took it from scratch, and he has created a lovely retreat in his backyard space.
Mm-hmm.
And a dedicated gardener out there every day.
Wow.
Working on it.
It's so. A lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are the gardeners generally in at the property during the tour?
Sometimes they are. It's up to them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they.
But
might.
Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're there and they like to answer questions.
How do you? Is there a set order in the tour that you go, or do you just pick a starting house and assume that the other people?
There is no set order.
Okay.
You can go and meet your friends wherever. And in fact, it works best if not everybody starts at the same place,
sure.
And the crowd is spread. So you can go north to south, south to north, east to west. It's however you prefer to go.
Sure. But other than the next door neighbors, people are probably going to be driving among these properties, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. But if you're out, if it's a lovely day and you want a healthy walk, I think that you could easily do probably three of
mm-hmm.
them just
nice.
By parking once.
And seeing people who aren't officially on the tour in the interim as you walk by their yards, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tell us about the fifth and final garden, the Let Us Entertain You garden.
Nowadays, a lot of people are putting in hardscape in their backyards.
Mm-hmm.
And so we like to showcase a home that has hardscape as well as landscape and gardens. And this has just some fabulous hardscape, pool, etc. for entertaining. And we had a property, smaller scale, a couple years ago that people really enjoyed seeing, you know, how they made this property this enormous entertaining space.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this particular property is. It's lovely.
What's the hardest part about serving on the committee for the garden walk?
Finding gardens.
I guess I should have asked this at the top of the interview. Are all the gardens on the tour gardens of Indianapolis Garden Club members?
No.
Okay.
No, these are just individuals in the. Actually, I don't think this year anybody is a member of the Garden Club. They're just gardens that we have heard about, or mm-hmm. you know, the friend of a friend, that sort of thing.
I picture a lot of driving and walking around neighborhoods that maybe the garden walk hasn't happened in before, and kind of peering over people's fences looking for good gardens. Is that the method? Don't reveal too much.
Let's just put it that way.
Sharon Gamble with Mary Grine of the Indianapolis Garden Club. The garden walk takes place, rain or shine, on Wednesday, June 8th. You can learn more at igcgardenwalk.com. Again, IGC for Indianapolis Garden Club, igcgardenwalk.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The Indianapolis Opera and Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra are presenting Crescendo at Wright River State Park to kick off the Indiana summer with a fun family party. This free community concert features music ranging from opera's greatest hits, Broadway standards, orchestral gems, to tunes from the Great American Songbook. Travis DiNicola spoke with mezzo-soprano Emily Fons when she was in town last winter. She'll be the featured soloist at Crescendo. And they were joined by Kevin Patterson, the general director of the Indianapolis Opera, as well.
Emily, Kevin, welcome to Are the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.
Absolutely. Emily, welcome to Indianapolis. We're recording this in November, right before you are about to be a part of the Indianapolis Opera's Opera Ball. We'll be airing this later in the spring when you're coming back in town for the Crescendo concert at the White River State Park. It's great to have you in town.
Thanks. It's wonderful to be back.
Yeah. So you actually were with the opera before, right? You were in a program before here?
I was one of the resident artists.
When
I was just starting out my career, and it was just a wonderful experience to jump into the opera world through Indianapolis Opera.
And that was back in, what, like 2008, 2009?
Mm-hmm. 2008, I think.
And look where it launched you.
Yeah.
It was all because of Indianapolis Opera, right?
All because.
So you are identified as one of the top upcoming opera singers in the world right now. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, been reading reviews of your performances all over the country that just sound great. Cold Mountain sounds like that was an incredible opera. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, it was a world premiere at Santa Fe Opera this summer. The libretto is by Jean Scheer, and the opera is composed by Jennifer Higdon. It's her first opera based on the novel by Charles Frazier.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think, a really significant work as it brought together this novel that's very American and then a female composer, which is also very unique. And in Santa Fe, which is a beautiful place to sing and also a place that takes full advantage of the opportunity to present a world premiere and mm-hmm. publicize it and draw people in. So I think it will be added to the canon of great works. I think Jennifer did a remarkable job and we had a great cast and I was just very fortunate to be a part of it.
Is preparing for a role like that in a modern opera different for you than in something more traditional?
Definitely. You know, there's no recording to go by. You can't mm-hmm. listen and say, well, this is how it's done. These are the tempi. You have to go in with a little bit of an open mind, knowing that the composer might still want to make some changes and kind of keeping that dialogue open. And, you know, the music is difficult as well. And a piano reduction doesn't necessarily do justice to the textures that Jennifer creates with the orchestra. So kind of putting all the puzzle pieces together slowly and then hoping you have a recognizable picture in the end is kind of what it's about, but I think we did more than that, and I think it
must be exciting. I mean, it sounds like you're much more involved in the creative process.
Definitely,
then, really.
And I think that's something that a lot of singers would tell you is what they enjoy about new works, is you really feel part of it in a different way.
Is the performance style different for you in something like that, a modern opera like that compared to a more traditional classical opera?
I mean, for me, I think it was. I think in some respect, I felt like I had more freedom to use different vocal colors and techniques that mm-hmm. I might not apply in a very standard piece like Mozart or Rossini. I felt like I had a little bit more room to play around. And also we sang with a dialect, a kind of Appalachian dialect, which, again, is very different than you know, those pure Italian vowels we aim for and everything else. So, yeah, it felt like a playground, like a sandbox a little bit, playing around and figuring out what worked and what didn't to tell the story.
What about from the acting standpoint?
I think because it is such an American story and mm-hmm. it is in English, people are going to expect an element of realism that they maybe don't realize that they're not expecting in
when
other
pieces.
When
they go to traditional opera,
So, I think it was also a challenge to really bring those characters to life in a very honest and immediate way for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I had great colleagues and a wonderful director in Leonard Folia, so it was pretty easy.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, thank you.
Very cool. So when you're back here in the spring, tell me about Crescendo, both of you, if you want to jump in, Kevin, because that's the final event for the opera season this year.
Yeah, so depending on how you look at it, for us it's either the final event for the public or the kickoff event for us launching us into the next season.
Okay.
It will be May 27th of 2016. So we're deep by that point into the bicentennial of Indiana. And so we're going to kind of theme crescendo around that. Mm-hmm. We've probably got the music of Cole Porter and Hoagie Carmichael, as well as the theme that is the Memorial Day weekend. And being in Indiana, as most people are well aware, that weekend going into Memorial Day is sort of the first great party in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Summer is here. It's the weekend of the Indianapolis.
And this is an outdoor concert.
It's an outdoor concert at White River State Park. It's the weekend of the 100th running, the centennial running of the Indianapolis 500. And mm-hmm. so we had a really great turnout last year. In our first year, about 1,000 people turned out for a free concert to be able to hear the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, the Indianapolis Opera with a fabulous cast. And we're happy to have Emily come back and be in the cast for Crescendo this year. It's really a great testament to
the Crescendo is not a free concert, right?
Crescendo is a free concert.
Oh, it is a free concert.
Yeah, it is a free concert at White
as
River
well.
State Park.
Wow.
So,
okay.
So that's great. It's a great way for families to come out and be a part of a party in the summer.
That's very, very cool. Made.
Yes.
So I, at this point, again, recording in November, Emily, you haven't picked your songs yet, or you don't know exactly what you're singing yet. But
no, we don't know exactly. But, you know, I can say I've done events like this in the past, and I think they're such a great way to engage the community mm-hmm. in a really, really fun atmosphere. It's very casual. I mean, I don't know here if people bring some food and picnic. Yeah. So, I think take advantage of it. Have fun. Get out there and, you know, hear some music.
Very cool.
It's great. It's also a great collaboration, Travis, with mm-hmm. Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Matt Kramer, it will be his first time on the podium as the new music director in doing Crescendo. So it's a great collaborative event for two organizations that are building awareness in the community. And this is a great, fun way to do it and a great way to encourage art and the inspiration that art brings in a community.
Excellent. And see some great talent.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Absolutely. Well, it sounds like it's just going to be a great night, and we'll certainly talk more about it as we get closer to that date. So, Emily, right now what I'm thinking about, in addition to we had just talked about, of course, Cold Mountain, but what are some of your other favorite roles that you've had a chance to perform?
Well, as much as I love new music, I have a soft spot for early music.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had a chance to do a lot of Handel and Vivaldi, and I think those roles in the same way that you have some freedom in new music, I think you have some freedom in old music because there was so much improvisation and ornamentation, and you really have a mm-hmm. chance to put your stamp on things as mm-hmm. a performer. And it's also such a tight collaboration then with the conductor and the orchestra to put that all together. So I would say early music, that's definitely some of my favorite music to sing.
Very cool. And what are you working on right now?
I'm about to go to Madison, Wisconsin and sing a holiday concert with the symphony, and then I'll be off to Toronto to sing Cherubino at Canadian Opera Company.
Very exciting. Excellent. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in Art of the Matter today, and looking forward very much to the Crescendo concert. It should be a lot of fun, and great to have you in the studio again, Kevin and Emily. Delightful to meet you.
Thanks so much.
Great to be back, Travis. Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with mezzo-soprano Emily Fons. She's the featured soloist in Crescendo, and with Kevin Patterson, general director of the Indianapolis Opera. The concert's presented by Indianapolis Opera and the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra at the White River State Park, and it takes place on Friday, May 27th at 7:30. General admission is free on the lawn at White River State Park. No tickets required. Just bring your blankets or lawn chairs. Special reserve seating is available, including VIP seating with reserved parking. And you can get more information at indieopera.org. Indieopera.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know what I've noticed recently?
Let's see. Is it finally getting warmer out? I don't know.
Barely.
Peonies are blooming.
Peonies are blooming. But we are deep in graduation season.
Yes,
just
yes,
about
yes.
Every weekend I see people all dressed up because they're going to somebody's graduation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking our listeners may have houses full of people they need to do something with after the graduation ceremony is over and the last cake crumbs are dusted from the table.
There we go.
And we have some suggestions on our calendar we call
What'll we do? Well, I'm looking at Beauty and the Beast up at Beef and Boards, which opens May 19th and runs through July 10th. Of course, it is the great Disney story, that magical fairy tale of Beauty and the Beast. And Carmel native Julia Bonnet is returning as Belle, returning to the Beef and Boards stage as Belle. And she will be performing with newcomer Preston Yates as the Beast. This, again, is going on at Beef and Boards, great theater up there. They'll be performing this through July 10th.
Classic love story.
Yes. Fun for the whole family.
Indeed.
And food for the whole family.
And food for the whole family. That's right. Hey, Sir Nicholas Winton was a fellow who, during World War II, saved the lives of 669 children from Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia and brought them across Hitler's Germany to Britain in 1939. And for nearly 50 years, he kept secret about how he rescued the children. Not even his wife knew anything about it. But he was knighted. He's Sir Nicholas Winton a few years ago. And there's a wonderful documentary about his efforts called Nicky's Family. It is the final film in the Indianapolis Jewish Film Festival, and it is to be seen at the Indiana History Center this Saturday night at 7 o'clock, admission just $10. Nicky's Family, fascinating documentary about a man who did something spectacularly humane and kept quiet about it for most of his life. Nicky's Family this Saturday, 7 o'clock, Indiana History Center.
That's very cool. Part of the Jewish Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Modus Dance is doing something fun and interesting again. They're doing their Hourglass, live music, dance improvisation, where the audience is welcome to participate. All ages community event Sunday, June 5th, 8 o'clock at the Basile Center with Modus Dance. And they're going to have immersive music and lights and movement over the course of 60 minutes with music composed by Robin Cox. And she'll be performing on the violin as well as with Sean Goodman on bass clarinet. She does some great stuff. And they will have movement facilitators there to help you. You can come and participate or just come and watch. Either way is a very cool thing. That's awesome that they're doing that. Modus does some very cool stuff. Hourglass on Sunday, June 5th.
Fantastic. Well, we mentioned this last week as a way. If you tuned in halfway through our calendar, you were probably like, am I in some weird time warp? Why are they talking about doing things for Mom? Mother's Day was the week before. We were helping you get out of the doghouse in case you forgot
your mom.
By the
way, my mom really liked your shout-out.
Yeah, I know. That's adorable. Well, whether you are a mom or have a mom that you can take by the hand in Indianapolis this weekend or not, you're going to want to put the Broad Ripple Art Fair on your to-do list. It's this Saturday and Sunday. More than 225 national-level artists and craftspeople who've been juried in. They sell handmade art. There's also live bands and other kinds of performers, a gourmet food court. And you can even check out the emerging artist area where Indianapolis Art Center students are showing you what they're doing.
They're emerging?
They're
it
emerging.
Like they're coming out of cocoons.
I picture a chrysalis.
Know, exactly.
Oh, no. I think I've just suggested some performance art. I hope it's not too late.
That'd be awesome.
But also, if you've, as I have done, used to do for many years, gone to the Broad Ripple Art Fair and said, I wish I had time to take a class here. We all spoke, they heard, they have pop-up classes. They also have a summer camp where you can do a staycation. So ask about classes when you're on the grounds of the Indianapolis Art Center.
Of course, Spin a Pot is one of the most popular events at
That's
the
right.
Broad Ripple Art Fair. And, you know, and if you are looking for a gift for that graduate, you could find something quite unique at the Broad Ripple Art
as
Fair.
As well as maybe for your dad, because Father's Day is just around the corner.
Or
for Travis, whose birthday is June
9th.
Sorry.
Or Sharon, whose birthday is
June 28th.
28th, later in June.
Please don't send us anything. We're not allowed.
Okay. And jumping to something completely different.
I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is a campaign season. And whatever you think about the candidates,
no.
I'm sure we're all thinking about who will be the future presidents of America. Well, that may be answered at the President Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site with their Future Presidents of America Youth Leadership Camp. They are now accepting applications for the class of 2016, which takes place between June 27th and July 1st at the Harrison Presidential Site. And this is for young leaders aged 12 to 16 who are going to be part of a week-long immersive history experience. It includes a whole bunch of different sessions and conversations with civic leaders and statesmen and stateswomen, and up-close experiences with artifacts and prepping for everything you need to know to be president. It sounds like there's some other people who could probably use that as well. But anyways, it sounds like an awesome camp dealing with sessions on confidence and qualifications, duty, honor, and sacrifice, poise and policy, communitas and civitas, and e pluribus unum. at the President Benjamin
that
Harrison.
That is lovely. It's ambitious, and I know.
I'm a little
maybe
too
they
old
do
for it.
One
12 to 16.
For big kids. Yeah. Big kids. We're some mathematical multiplier of 12 or 16,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Like
hey, speaking of family-friendly, the Indiana Historical Society has a really interesting viewpoint on genealogy research with a workshop, a free genealogy workshop, this Saturday from 1 to 3 at the Indiana History Center. And it's called Growing Little Leaves, Fashionable Genealogy. And what the viewpoint is you're going to learn about the history of fashion and how it can help unlock the secrets of family trees. You'll learn to spot trademarks of different time periods through different hands-on activities like working with fabric swatches and studying photos from the IHS's collections. So, and you're invited to bring your own family photos so that you can study the fashions of your own ancestors. So great family friend. You don't have to have kids to go to this, by the way, but if you do have them, take them along and learn how you can find out more about dating a photograph by the era of fashion that's included.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Huh. Hey, something for this weekend, and that is the opening reception for the artist Nathaniel Russell for Syntax Season, and this is up at Printex. What is Printex? Well, Printex, if you haven't been there, is a really cool space up in Broad Ripple, sort of combination magazine shop, gallery, meeting space, and multidisciplinary space, a whole bunch of other things. And so Printex is having a show of the work of Nathaniel Russell, who's originally from Indiana, and the work is all focused basically on fake books and posters and other objects that he's created. He's worked professionally as someone who's actually out in California, done work making real posters and real things like that, but this is all
wait, did they get Indy Doesn't Read Books as a sponsor?
Oh,
for the fake books?
For the fake books. So yeah, they're very playful, let's just
say. Yes, they are.
Yes, playing
I've
with
been
texts
in there.
And
true.
Objects and things is his work, and things that look as if maybe they're real, but they're not. And you can figure out what is real and what isn't when you check out the opening reception on Saturday the 21st from 2 to 5 at Printex, and then the show will be up for a while afterwards.
All right, road trip time. Where are you going? Madison, Indiana for River Roots Music and Folk Arts Festival, which is going on this weekend. Musicians of all levels like to spend some of their time jamming with other musicians, which they can do in the jam tent, which has become one of the most popular
places. Not strawberry
jam. Not strawberry jam, not apricot jam, but the music jam tent. If you don't know about this and you're a folk music fan or a roots music fan or an Americana fan or a bluegrass fan, then you need to learn about this ASAP. Go to riverroots.org, riverroots.org. And there are lots of other fun things to see and do in Madison as well. So if you can make an impromptu trip this weekend, River Roots Music and Folk Arts Festival.
Sounds good. Hey, something else going on this weekend, Ballet Theatre of Carmel's annual spring performance. They are going to be doing La Sylphide and the Firebird, and this is taking place on Saturday the 21st at both 3 and 7:30 at the Westfield High School Auditorium, Ballet Theatre of Carmel, their big spring performance.
Travis, can you step around here and show me your fifth position for a moment?
I'd be happy to, Sharon.
Hey, you're really flexible.
Well, thank you for noticing.
Well done. Speaking of ballet, don't worry. Travis is not going to have to get into fifth position and plié and relevé, but he is narrating Carnival of the Animals as part of the Balanchine Masterworks concert this weekend, Indianapolis School of Ballet presenting this at the Toby Theater at the IMA this Saturday and Sunday, both performances at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, Indiana State Museum has just released their Wednesday nights this summer, where they're going to be doing a whole bunch of things with the Idle Drawer, with activities along the downtown canal to make Hump Day even just a little bit better on Wednesday nights. So they're doing things like a game night with hula hoops and mastodon puzzles and jump ropes and a science night. An art night, create your own masterpiece, and what you're laughing at the mastodon.
I know, I picture the mastodons hula hooping for some
that
reason.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't
if
that
they
be
could
cool?
Do that. So every Wednesday night, science nights, you'll learn about water tension and different playing with bubbles and things like that. And then they'll also be doing working with the Idoljorg with Idoljorg at a Glance, where there's going to be live music and other things going on as well. So lots. We're getting ready for summer. I'm so looking forward to summer, and there's going to be lots of good stuff going on.
You mean when we can finally turn the heat off in our homes and stop building fires in our fireplaces?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's not the State Museum Wednesday night, starting in June.
Love it. Hey, you know, I just want to go on record as saying it's a very fine time in Indianapolis to like beer, because not only are there tons of craft breweries, like five have opened since we started doing this calendar, but also the not-for-profit arts organizations. I mean, I know the Phoenix Theater got in on the act way before drinking beer was cool with Brouhaha, which is also coming up this summer, but all the others are now piling on. For example, Connor Prairie's young professional group, the Horizon Council, is hosting an evening of craft beer tastings from more than 20 local craft brewers on June 3rd. It's called History on Tap, and you can find out more at ConnorPrairie.org. Beer is good.
Beer is good. And on that note, we will remind you that you can always learn more about arts events going on in Indianapolis. Local arts events at IndieArts.org/guide. The Arts Council of Indianapolis' Indie Arts Guide website. Or just listen to us next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
And Brew?
And Brew.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Like countless theatrical companies before them, Wisdom Tooth Theater Project and Indie Shakes have found new meaning in Shakespeare by changing up the era of the action. Sharon Gamble invited the Merry Wives of Windsor's Mistress Ford, Amy Hayes, Master Ford, Rob Johansson, and Falstaff, Adam Crowe, to talk about why they've set their production in the 1950s.
So, Amy, as the official representative of Wisdom Tooth, first I want to ask you to explain your company's name.
Oh, that's a really good story. Ron Johnston, who is our founding producing artistic director, came up with the name because when he was the head of the theater department at Andersen University, he wanted to create a theater company with his students that would give them access to professional venues in Indianapolis, so that they would produce a show at Andersen, do it at their school, and then they'd move it to a venue in Indianapolis. And he wanted to give them an opportunity as well to interact with professional theater artists as they were going into their undergraduate training. So they brainstormed up names and came up with Wisdom Tooth because you get wisdom teeth when you're young, but you don't get wisdom until you're older. And so it was a cross section of young and wisdom interacting. And then when he restructured the company after he left Andersen and came to Indianapolis and turned it into a full-time professional company, we talked about changing the name, but it already had a little bit of stature here in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And we decided, no, that would remain part of our mission, is that we would give newcomers a chance to interact with veterans and a place where people can grow as artists. Which is why we also have an actor training component to our company as well.
Fantastic. And it's such a distinctive name, too. Mm. It stays in people's memory.
Yeah.
Which is always a good thing for a company name of any product.
Yeah,
right?
And it's called Wisdom Tooth Theater Project because we kind of want it to feel like everything is a lab and we're all growing and we're all trying to work this out as artists.
So this is a collaboration with Indie Shakes. And who wants to tell me about Indie Shakes?
Well, I'll tell you about that, too.
All right. Good girl.
Indie Shakes is my baby. When I came to Indianapolis a few years ago, I just wanted to be doing more Shakespeare.
From?
And so I'm from Indiana, and I lived other places, including out of the country in England, for a long time. And then
wow.
And had babies and went to grad school and did all this stuff and then came back here, raised our kids. And we, my husband and I, have been teaching at DePauw University for the last 13 years. And then I came back into the theater community professionally about 5 years ago after my kids got to a certain age. And I just wanted to be doing more Shakespeare. So I went and talked to Pauline Moffitt at Indie Fringe and said, I like your space. Can I start a little company where I would just do one show a year, Shakespeare, either acting or directing in it? And and my friend and partner Ron Johnston collaborated with me on that. And then when we reestablished Wisdom Tooth, we just folded in Indie Shakes. So we have one Indie Shakes production in our season every year, which is a classics based show.
Makes great sense. Mm-hmm. So why Merry Wives?
Do either of you want to speak to this? Bill Simmons.
She's looking at her husband and at Falstaff.
My stage husband. Bill Simmons, who's our director, is a guest director for Wisdom Tooth on this one. And we brought Wisdom Tooth, our Merry Wives, to him and said, we want to do a fun romp comedy. We've done comedies before, but last year our show was Jason and Medea. It was a little tragic and
a little dark.
We want to do something fun. We want to do something campy, and we threw out the idea of 1950s housewives, and so that's he just took it and ran with it.
Remind us of the plot, broad strokes here.
Y'all go.
One of the boys.
Good God. So the plot. Let's see. The main part plot. Falstaff, which is, you know, one of the most beloved Shakespeare characters, has his eye on a few ladies, and the ladies are spoken for, and the ladies say, yeah, let's make him think that he's got a shot. And so they plot to set him up. But of course, now, Adam, you should talk about this a little bit because you are Falstaff. So
Adam, who's been waiting his whole life to be...
I did take note that the last time I played Falstaff was about 25 years plus years ago at Garfield Park for the Indianapolis Shakespeare Company.
Has it been that long?
We did Henry IV Part 1. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I needed a fat suit, which I've discarded for this production. A method actor. I don't require one now, or anything on my gray hair.
Although I have to say, you're really not big enough to play.
Well, there's still time. You don't know what will happen before we close.
You need to channel Orson Welles towards the end of his life. Yeah.
Real quick.
Poor Falstaff just wants to have a little money, and the ladies are married to men who have some money, and so he thinks he's quite the romantic, and he's going to get to their husband's money through them, and little does he know they're way too smart for it.
Falstaff is a beloved character. Is it scary to play him at all? Is it daunting?
It's a role I've wanted to play again, and this is the Shakespeare brought him back at the Queen's request. Mm-hmm. So the story goes, just because she loved him so much. So it's really an honor to get to do it, and something I've been looking forward to.
Did you play him in the Henry plays originally?
In Henry, yeah, Henry IV, Part 1. Mm.
That's my favorite Shakespeare.
Yeah, me too. Mm. Yeah. Well, one of my favorites. But
I know what
history.
You might be doing next year.
And it was a while ago, but I'd hoped to get to do this. A friend in Georgia had talked about doing it at her company, and then it didn't work out, and then this came up, and I was very grateful.
So what is it about, and I'm going to toss this out to all three of you, there's something about the character of Falstaff that everybody seems to relate to. Everybody loves the guy.
He's probably definitely a guy you want to have a beer with.
Yeah.
Or 12. I mean, in any of those plays, you see his oafishness, you see all of his foibles, but you also see a creative, fun, inventive person who somehow makes it work, you know, makes his life work. He's always short on cash. In all the plays, he befriends himself to people that can help him out. But I think he genuinely loves, like in Henry, he loves Hal.
Yeah.
But,
and Hal loves him.
Yeah. But and it's tragic how that relationship unfolds. Spoiler alert. he's somebody you want to hang with despite his shortcomings.
And I think I love seeing his heart get broken. I mean, he's someone who's capable. He's he's kind of a prankster, and he's a little wily, and he thinks he's smart. He's smart.
Yes.
He's not stupid.
He thinks he's smarter than he is.
He's a survivor.
He's
for
a
sure.
survivor, but he's also vulnerable, and he gets hurt, and you get to see that, and I think that all of us.
And when he gets his comeuppance, it's not tragic. I like to compare it to Malvolio in Twelfth Night, who storms off after he's been punked and is very, very bitter. And Falstaff
gets invited to the party.
Yeah, gets invited to the party. He knows he's been made a fool of, and he suspects that there was at least one good reason, if not more. And and he all's forgiven, and everybody is still friends at the end.
Mm-hmm. So why the 1950s?
I got the idea because I was looking up productions of Merry Wives online and came across there was an article in the Guardian in the UK, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, that said something about the best productions of Shakespeare in London or in mm-hmm. England at the time. And one of them, it was this critic who was writing it, and he said one of my favorite all-time productions of Shakespeare anywhere, anytime, was the RSC production. I think it was directed by Trevor Nunn, and it was set in the 1950s. And there was one photograph of Falstaff, like, whipping Mistress Ford around a coffee table in a sunken living room, and she had on, cigarette pants, and it was
very
1950s. And then it described one scene where the women were plotting together under hair dryers in the beauty parlor. And my mind just went crazy, and I was like,
perfect.
And then, of course, Lucy and Ethel came up, and we just kept springboarding off of all of these classic television shows in the 50s and how, and it is a sitcom farce, is what it is.
Sure.
It just works great.
And the 1950s in the United States was that era of anything is possible.
Yes.
You know, we came out of World War II more prosperous than ever, and we've got all the, the perfect little house in the suburbs with a
right.
picket fence.
And the women had gone to work during the war, mm-hmm. and so for the first time outside of the house. And so these women are, Bill describes it as a feminist play. These women run this show,
mm-hmm.
and they teach everybody what needs to be what needs to happen. And so the 1950s seemed like a good springboard for early feminism and, women saying, okay, no, we're running things here, which was actually how it was in Elizabethan times. This particular class of people, this merchant class, which mm-hmm. was an interesting class to be in because they had money but no power, no position. But they really had kind of good, comfortable lives. And they weren't political, so they weren't ever called before.
They weren't exposed.
They weren't exposed. They were under the radar, but they had money, and so their lives were pretty comfortable. And the Elizabethan housewife controlled the purse strings of the house and kind of ran things. They were sort of other than the queen, they were the women in England who had power and clout.
Hmm.
So it seems to fit.
How fun. And there's something, Bach and Shakespeare are similar in this regard. You can transmit them to any other time and place or instrument, and it works.
Yeah, it's uncanny how it works.
Yeah.
Without changing the text, we haven't really changed. We've cut stuff, as mm-hmm. as we always do when we do Shakespeare.
We changed a couple of things.
Rob changes.
Intentionally.
We'll
with
see
apologies
happens.
To William Shakespeare.
This is a sitcom exit line.
Yep. Mistress and Master Ford, talk to me about creating a marriage. Have you worked together before?
Nope.
No, this is our first time.
Cool.
We've done some readings together.
We did readings
yeah.
together, which is how we knew we wanted to work
That's
together.
Right, yeah. This, the cast came together in a really fascinating way, like pieces and parts from all over town, which is so much fun. But our relationship, I love our... Uh-huh. Marriage on stage, because I think it's very easy to look predominantly at the paranoia of my character, of Ford, just as a raving lunatic of a jealous man.
Uh-huh.
And what we've tried to explore is seeing glimpses at the beginning of the show that these people love each other. Uh-huh. Yep, he has a problem with jealousy, and maybe... it might be one of those relationships where it's like, well, she is a flirt.
Yeah.
so I feel like there is a basis for the jealousy, But I don't want us to focus on that initially.
You don't want to be perceived as a one-note character.
Yeah, and I think that's a danger with this character and this relationship. So I think we have a nice we've captured some nice elements of the other sides, the love, the passion. I think they have a great sex life. And I think in his mind, he's like, she has a great sex life with more than me. And then I get these tips about Falstaff, and what I love about Ford, he snowballs. And, gee, does anybody else do this? When he thinks, when he's left to his own devices, paranoia just takes over. He has four soliloquies to the audience, and that, I don't know.
Falstaff does.
But not. I don't know if you have
just
that many. But it's a great device Shakespeare has of one person starting at point A of paranoia, and by the end of the monologue, he's at Z, and it's horrible, you know. That's his struggle. But then you'll have to come and see if they solve it at the end. If they make it work. Get tickets, people. Come on.
We call it a teaching moment. Mr. Sford decides to take this on as a teaching moment.
Sharon Gamble with Adam Hayes, Rob Johansson, and Adam Crow from the cast of The Merry Wives of Windsor, produced by Wisdom Tooth Theater Project and Indie Shakes. The production runs through May 28th at Indie Fringe. And you can learn more and get tickets at indiefringe.org. Again, indiefringe.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll chat with Hannah Lindgren about her new documentary, Food First.
I'll talk with the new Deputy Director for Horticulture and Natural Resources for the IMA, Jonathan Wright.
And I'll find out about Keeping Hinkle Hinkle, a storytelling event at, surprise, Hinkle Fieldhouse. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call.
What'll we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter. Made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.